All right, this program, I've got Bob from New York on with me. You there, Bob?
Yeah.
Good.
Rochester, in fact.
Well, I've got your full name unless you want to later. He's going to talk to us about his music experience, so this is going to go to Menvee's presentations page, as well as the technology podcast. Bob, why don't you introduce yourself to all of the various listeners who are going to hear you, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Bob Wright, and it's R-I-T-E, by the way, and I live in Rochester, New York. And I had this idea of doing a program talking about my Braille music background as well as the pitfalls that I ran into, you know, with the hopes that hopefully, you know, people could learn from my experiences and that kind of thing. I really got excited in doing this when I learned about Menvee, and that when I learned that there's a music education network for people who are blind or visually impaired, which deals with the whole issue of Braille music literacy. When Jared first told me about it, I was really excited and I wanted to become a part of the organization. I'm not currently teaching music or anything like that, and I never ended up with a music degree. I ended up actually with a music minor from Houghton College, which is in the southern part of New York State in the southern tier. Now, how are we going to do this, Jared? Are you going to ask me questions or what are we going to do this?
We can do it whichever way you wish. Let's see. I know you're in your 50s, so Braille music, I guess we'll start with all of that. You're in your 50s. You didn't give out your age, so I'm not either. But I know you're in your 50s, so things have changed since. But why don't you talk to us about how you were taught Braille music back? That put you in the 60s, I believe.
That's correct. Yes. Well, I am 58. I'm not ashamed of giving out my age.
Well, I don't want to do that without you doing it first, because...
Right. Well, I am 58. When I was going to be approaching my sophomore year in high school, I had an itinerant teacher who did have a music degree. She was very good. And I wanted to take Music Theory 1 in high school, Rudiments of Music 1. And my itinerant teacher's name was Grace Meunier, M-E-U-N-I-E-R. And Mrs. Meunier said to me, well, Bob, if you intend to take Music Theory 1, you will need to begin to study Braille music. So, now prior to that, I had been studying piano. I started my piano study back in May of 1962. I was in sixth grade and I was approaching graduation from sixth grade. And I worked with a piano teacher who mainly taught me music by ear. I did not learn Braille music. She did not know Braille music to begin with, so she really couldn't teach me Braille music. So I had no concept of notes and note values, and I did not know what a quarter note sounded like, what an eighth note sounded like, or what a half or a whole note sounded like, okay? So I My unfortunately, my first piano teacher had to end her students in the spring of June of 1965 because of ill health. So I had to look for another teacher. So my parents contacted the Association for the Blind, and they gave her a name. Well, the lady didn't really know Braille music, but she said that before I could study with the teacher who taught Braille music, I really had to do some things with her first to get me ready for her. So I worked with her for a couple of weeks, and then when I did what she wanted me to do, she said that I was ready for her. So I started with Patricia Boyle in September of 1965. I just had started my sophomore year in high school. And it was a bit disconcerting because after playing something like Nocturne in C by Grieg, which is about a fifth grade piece, I had to go back and I had to literally start with very, very basic piano stuff from the very, very beginning. I started with the Diller and Quayle solo books. I started with the first solo book, and I went through to the end of the second solo book with my teacher. My teacher was a very eccentric lady. She had lost her sight later in life, and in any event, I worked with her from September till about May of 1966. Unfortunately, she said something to me one night which absolutely incensed and hurt me. And I decided that I did not want to continue with her at all. She basically gave me some fundamentals of Braille music reading. We didn't spend a lot of time with that. I mean, I just had to learn what I could learn on my own. And so from May of 1966 until the time when I entered Houghton in September of 1968, I had no Braille music study of any kind. I refused to go back to her, and she was really about the only teacher who could really teach me, but I really didn't feel like I was really learning anything. Now, in my freshman year, when I decided that I wanted to study piano, the music faculty did not know what to do with me. None of the piano teachers wanted to teach me because they felt that it would have demanded a lot of extra time if they had a blind student. So they decided that they would contact a couple who were retired and who were, they were teachers on staff there, and their names were, their last name was Andrews, and Mrs. Andrews taught piano like part-time, basically. So they thought that Mrs. Andrews, Mr. and Mrs. Andrews, would be the most fitting placement for me. So I worked with Mrs. Andrews. And then After that, I had a piano teacher during the summer school, during the summer of 1968-1969. His name was Ed Thornton. He was a nice guy. And so the long and the short of it was that I wanted in the beginning to get a double major of liberal arts music and Spanish with a German minor. But when I left Houghton after my sophomore year to do some rehab work, when that was unsuccessful, I returned to Houghton. And I took Music Theory 3. Actually, I had placed out of Music Theory 1 for the college. So I was ready to do Music Theory 2. So I took Music Theory 2 and Music Theory 3. And I had also studied some organ and some harpsichord while I was at Houghton, too. But in the long and the short of it is that Dr. Finney, the head of the department, didn't feel that I was qualified enough to continue with my music major. And he made a comment to me when I re-auditioned that I played like a blind person. And I said, well, what do you mean by playing like a blind person? He says, well, you keep stretching to look for notes. And I've heard a lot of blind people in my time, and a lot of them play a lot better than you do. I mean, they're much more accomplished and everything. And that was very, 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 very hurtful to me. But he said, nevertheless, you did take enough hours so that I will grant you a music minor, which he did. But I felt really, really hurt during the audition. And things did not turn out the way I hoped, you know, that they would have turned out. So, and it's been difficult for me to want to try to sit down and play the piano because I've had all of these negative experiences in my life. And it's made it difficult for me to say, well, you know, I want to continue and I want to go on from here. And that's basically a very short summary of what I went through as a blind music student. And I'm really, you know, I'm really disgusted because I really was not given the training that I could have and that kind of thing.
Did you ever pick up Braille music again, or did you just drop it?
Well, for a brief period, I did go to the Metropolitan School of the Arts in Syracuse. I studied piano, I studied voice, I studied recorder, and I did study some theory there. So I did pick it up again. But I'm not a very, very good sight reader. I'm not very fluent. I'm very, very, very slow at it. So, that is the state of affairs as it is now.
So by joining MENVI, and for those who are hearing this on the technology podcast, I'm going to give you our website. It's www.menvi.org. I am the webmaster. Richard Tesh is the head of the Braille Music Division over there. Grant Horrocks is the piano chair over there. He is responsible for the Royal Conservatory of Music exams in Toronto. I took those myself. I took the theory exam and everything else. I know back in when Bob was taking school, they didn't have a whole lot of that. I actually went to the Southern California Conservatory of Music when it was in La Cañada. Did that, but they wanted to push me to take music for college, and that's usually what they do, but I did not want to do that full-time. I wanted to do it as a hobby. Mm-hmm. So that, there was a specific reason why I left, and while I'm not going to go into that, I am now doing the webmaster work for Menvi, and I've been doing it for almost four years now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by joining this network, Bob, like I did, well, I went to the school first, and then Richard introduced me to the network, and I just accepted it, and we gave him, you know, my contact information without filling out an app like we had to do for you. By joining this network, what do you want to hopefully gain? Do you want to get back into it? I know you're close to 60, and I would, you know, if that's what you would like to do, the network would really support you doing that.
Possibly. I think I would like to. I've even wondered if they could ever have, like, a summer program for seniors who are not necessarily thinking of pursuing a career in music. I think it's too late for me to do that, but I think that I'd like to see something where they could have some sort of a summer institute for seniors.
Well, I know we can get you in contact with someone in Connecticut who runs a music camp.
That's for younger kids. That's for younger people, though.
But I don't. I understand that, but I don't know. Maybe you can suggest it to him because he's the one that would run it. I don't think we would here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I've heard of him.
I forget his
David
name.
David Goldstein,
Yes. And, David, if you happen to listen to this, feel free to get in contact with us, and maybe we can try and promote it. I know it would cost a bit of money, but, you know, if it could be possible, we'd like to see something like that, especially for those who just want to do this for fun.
Right. I mean, a lot of seniors don't have a lot of money.
No.
To do this sort of thing, and if I could ever get involved with something like this, it would be wonderful. I wouldn't be interested necessarily in the computer aspects, because I don't have a computer, but I would mainly be interested in playing and singing and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Well, since you've grown up with the evolution of Braille music and teaching, have you seen it change throughout the years since you took Braille music? You know, have you tried to pursue it in the 70s and 80s? Or
No. I did not know about Menvi even back then.
Well, Menvi wasn't created until 97, actually.
Right, and of course, I did not know about David Goldstein either back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I don't know
how. He may not have started that until later.
Right. But even without David Goldstein and what we have today, have you seen any type of change between the time you took music and the time that you want to do it now?
No. I wasn't really aware of anything that was even going on pedagogically. I mean, I knew about the Braille Music section of NLS, and I knew about the MBA program. But now the MBA program, their Braille production department closed on the 13th of June. So what they decided to do is that all of their music scores are being sent to the music section of NLS, so that way people could
have it,
produce their own copies, and you know they could borrow stuff through Web Braille and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in touch with Karen Gerald, who is the music coordinator there now.
Yes, yeah, she she's actually, I think she's one of our advisors now.
Yeah.
I thought maybe we'd just take the time and talk about your experience, you know, with Braille music, and if anyone else would like to talk about their experiences in different states, and even if you are in New York like Bob is and you've had a different experience, we'd love to hear from you, because while Braille music has evolved a long way since Bob's age, I mean, now we've got companies like Dancing Dots out there, which is linked off our homepage. We have got Sam Flores of Opus Technologies out there that makes software and stuff like that. We've got a whole network of people, and I even talked to people in Mexico. I told you about that story in Mexico, right?
No.
Talked to these folks in Mexico, and the mother is transcribing stuff for the child, and they have nothing in Mexico.
Wow.
Even today, they have literally nothing. It's up to the parents to do it.
Wow.
And I need to get back in contact with them to see if we can assist in any anything, or whether they are all set, or whether we need to get them stuff. I know I need to deal with your issues with the organization, and I hope to do that today. You know, it's unfortunate that even today, with all of this technology we have, we are still having problems.
Yeah. I certainly believe in Braille literacy, and I want to extend that to Braille music literacy.
And that's what this organization is trying to do, and it's a never-ending battle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you did, we'll talk about literary Braille for a little bit. I guess we can talk about this, too. You're a literary Braille proofreader?
I'm a literary Braille transcriber and proofreader, yes.
And talk to us a little bit about that and your experiences with that.
Well, I started taking the course in Braille transcribing and literary Braille proofreading in the early 70s, but I never got it finished. I made several attempts, and NLS was wondering, you know, what I wanted to get out of it, and you know, why I wasn't finishing and everything. But in 1983, well, after I had quit my job that I had as a Braille teacher's aide at a rehab agency, after I quit my job in 82, I spent the next 4 years sitting at home doing virtually nothing. I was just living on Social Security and everything. So one day in February of 1983, I decided that I wanted to get back to taking the Braille transcribing and proofreading course. So I got in touch with John Wilkinson, who was he was the Braille proofreading instructor for the Braille development section. It was the Braille code section, I think, at that time, or Braille development section. And the head of the section at that time was Maxine Dorr. And so I told him that I wanted to start the course back up again. But I said, you know, I also want to be very honest and let you know that I had made attempts to take the course before, but things just weren't right, and I just wasn't able to finish it. So I said, I wonder if your section will allow me to start the course over. So he spoke with Maxine Dorr. And Maxine said, by all means, if Bob wants to start the course again, we'll let him do that. Well, at that time, I had to use other people's Braille machines because my Braille writer had mysteriously gotten stolen. And so I didn't have the funds to buy a Brailler at the time. So, when I got to about lesson, I think it was 10 or 11, Mrs. Dorff said to me that in order for me to continue with the course, I really would need to buy a Brailler because the machines that I had been using were producing unsatisfactory lessons. So, since that was put before me, I thought, oh boy, now what do I do? Well, I contacted my state counselor, and my state counselor said, well, we can't help you. And they wouldn't do anything. So, I contacted an independent living agency in Syracuse at that time. It was called ARISE, A-R-I-S-E. And it's an acronym that stands for various words. And so I remember I spoke to a guy by the name of, I think his name was Dave Peluso. And he suggested that I contact the commission. Well, I did. And then I told him what my commission counselor had said and what the state counselor had said and everything. And he said, Bob, that's absolutely ridiculous. He said, why don't I try to contact someone from my Lions Club to see if we could help you to get a machine? Well, I decided that I wanted the Lions Club to get me an electric Brailler. I'd never had one before, but I heard how great they were. And eventually, three Lions Clubs, my Lions Club, which at that time was Baldwinsville Lions Club, and then John Peluso's Lions Club, and then another Lions Club in the city, pulled their funds together to get me my electric Brailler. And I was able to finish the transcribing part of the course, and then I went on to do the Braille proofreading course. While I was working on the Braille proofreading course, with the help of several sighted people, I worked on what is called a trial manuscript. In order to become certified in Braille transcribing, you have to produce, you have to demonstrate your mastery of the Braille Grade 2 code by producing a 35-page Braille manuscript. So with the help of several sighted people, I chose several chapters of a book, and they dictated them to me. And then I produced it in Braille, page by page, sentence by sentence, you know, paragraph by paragraph. My manuscript ended up to be like something like about 61 pages. And I sent it in to NLS. I even had them thermoform a copy. And I decided to give that copy to my instructor as a present for being such a wonderful guy. And I told him that I was going to do that. And, well, I'll never forget this, because on the morning of December 9th, that was the day that I received my certification in Braille proofreading. On the morning of the 9th of December, he called me, and he said, "Bob, you did an outstanding job on your Braille manuscript. However, I've got a question that I want to ask you. How do you hyphenate the word Savior?" And I thought, well, I guess you'd put it after the A. He said, "Well, according to my dictionary, you're supposed to hyphenate it after the V." So I said, "Hold on, let me check my source." I had a source that I used called 20,000 Words, and it divided words into syllables. Well, I got out my trusty 20,000 Words and looked it up. And sure enough, it was hyphenated after the V.
Well, how do you like that? That's what I would have guessed.
You would have hyphenated it after the A or the V?
The V.
The V. Well, as it turned out, I would have been able hyphenate it on the line of Braille that they worded the non. I would have been able to put down the V as well as the hyphen. But because I was one cell short, because I didn't use the line totally, and because I mishyphenated that word, I hyphenated it incorrectly, I received a score of 98% out of a possible 100.
That's excellent.
And I had been trying so hard to aim for that 100. And so I said, "Oh, John, you're right. You have to hyphenate it after the V." He says, "Well, I guess you know what your mark is." And I said, "Yeah, I guess I'm going to get a 98. He says, "Well, Bob, even so, you did better than I did when I did my work." You did better than I did on my Braille manuscript. Now, right after that, for a couple of months, I did subcontract work for Triformation Braille Service in Stuart, Florida. That was the biggest joke of my life. Number one, they never prepared me. The Library of Congress course never talked to me about working with a sighted copy holder. So I had no way of knowing how to work with a sighted copy holder. And I was paid by the page, not by the hour that I spent in proofing the work. So whatever copy holders I hired, they would get half of my check. And my check was based on 15 cents a page. That was what it was based on. Which was terrible, because proofing a document takes hours.
Absolutely.
I was never paid by the hour. I was only paid by the page. So, and it was just ridiculous for me to try to continue to do this and pay my copy holders such little money. So after 2 months, I did not do any more. I did work for Arise for a while. I did some transcribing there. But after a while, that stopped because I no longer had the volunteers to help me. So I really have not really done that much Braille proofreading in my career. But I feel very, very glad that I've gotten those certificates, though.
But it just goes to show, and I wanted to bring this up, that even though Bob, you know, didn't have a good Braille music experience, you know, if he could have pursued the Braille music too, you could have been certified in both.
Right.
Because they are taking Braille music certifiers to be able to transcribe Braille music. They're looking for more. So this goes all the way back to the Braille music. You were very good in the literary aspect, and you passed. But the Braille music was terrible.
Well, the Braille music, they're not, they don't currently have a course that has been developed for blind students. The Braille music course is only for sighted people right now.
Well, what I mean is, even if you had someone sighted to help you do that, you know, you didn't have the support to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You didn't have the support that somebody could say, well, you know, we'll help you do this.
Right.
And
I was excited to learn, even when I started getting the newsletter, I was excited to learn, unfortunately, that this problem is still occurring because there are a lot of blind people, there are a lot of blind musicians that are getting the short end of the stick because the professors don't know how to deal with them.
And we keep teaching them. I mean, look, I was taking choir when I was in high school. So I told the choir teacher to give me the music and give me whatever I needed, and I was working with a teacher in La Cañada, and I would have it brailled and all of that, and she was fine with it. I took the music. Richard spent the day brailing it, taught me how to read it, and the whole bit. But there's a lot of people. I mean, you got excellent support during the proofreading, you know, the course, and that's why I wanted to talk about, you know, the whole Braille aspect. You got excellent support for that. But even during your schooling on the on the Braille music,
mm-hmm.
you didn't have that support altogether. You had some people who wanted to help you, others basically said you're not good enough, and this is an ongoing problem we're having, and it's unfortunate because I could probably go contact the NLS and say I want to take a certification in transcribing, and I could probably pass no problem. While I don't have, the resources you do in regards to what words need to be hyphenated, you know what I would do? I would, if I don't have enough room, I would just put it on the next line.
But in the Braille transcribing course, you have to try to use every single cell that you possibly can. And you have to look up hyphenation. Though when you are doing computer Braille documents, there isn't Braille words that are long or that are too long to fit in one line are placed on the next line because of word wrap.
Yeah.
That's not true when you're going to be doing the literary Braille course, because you have to look up the words to be able to know how to hyphenate them.
Yeah, which I wouldn't have a resource for. So they'd have to provide that to me.
Well, you probably could use an online dictionary, too.
I could probably pursue it.
Yeah.
But, we would have great support for it nowadays because of the computer technology.
Right.
You didn't have the internet was barely around when you were taking all of this.
Right. Yeah.
So literary or music, I mean, it's still a big problem, the music aspect of it. Literary, mm-hmm. you know, they can just hear. Have a presence.
What's that?
Here, have a present.
Oh.
So what are you doing any type of Braille work?
No. I did get all the books from the Southern, you know, Conservatory of Music. I think that maybe starting in the fall I'm going to go through those. You know, the Braille music introduction and the piano and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was really excited about doing it, and then when I heard that the Braille book bank, you know, the NBA was going to be closing down its Braille facility, I was really, really upset. And that put the damper on everything because I wasn't going to be able to buy Braille music scores.
Yeah.
But you know, I realize now, I mean, I could work with NLS if I ever wanted to and see what they had and that kind of thing.
Right. I mean, it's evolving. And I'd like to do future programs with you, for MenV and for Tech, and I would like to see what your progress is throughout your studies of An Introduction to Braille Music by Richard Tesh.
Mm-hmm.
I did read, it's a BRM number. Yes, I said a BRM number. It's called Who's Afraid of Braille Music by Richard Tesh.
Yeah, I read that too.
It's a one-volume book. I found it because I was looking for technology-specific books, and I ran across it on Web Braille, and I actually read it on the note taker. I didn't order a Braille copy because it's just so short. I just sent it back in a day.
Yeah.
So I just downloaded a copy via Web Braille. And Richard did an excellent job with it. I was actually very impressed.
Yeah, I liked it too.
He wanted me to review it. And what I might do is I might do that. I might go and get it again, sit down and read it again, and then review it. Because there was one thing that I had a question on with Richard, but when I went to go ask him, I had since deleted the book and didn't go back through and read it and ask him what it was about.
Oh, okay.
But there was one aspect of something I didn't understand. But besides that, he did a great job with that book. So what, would you like to come on a future program and talk to us again about how your studies are going? And
yeah, sure.
All right. Can definitely do that. Well, thanks a lot for being on our program. I know it's, at the time of this recording, it's nearing 6 Eastern time, so it's, time for Bob to go eat, but I did want to take the opportunity to have him on the program and I'll make this available for both technology and for the MenV online. It will be available as a podcast on the presentations page at presentations.menv.org. As soon as I get the file up and the HTML written, it will be available there as a single file, or it will be in the technology podcast among other things that will be discussed in that podcast. Well, Bob, I appreciate your time. Keep us posted on the course that you're going to be taking with Richard.
Okay.
You know, I know you're not going to come down to Los Angeles to take it, but you know, keep us posted on how you're coming along with that. And I'll let you know what's going on with me so you know how to find me. And, of course, we can do this again.
Okay. Great.
Well, thanks for being on the program, Bob.
You're welcome.